We're going to have Tom come up and speak on sponsorship and introduce the main speaker. Tom.
Well, I'm Tom. I'm alcoholic. And it's good to be here. It's good to be sober. My sobriety date is November 18th, 2001. Where's the milk crate, Jose? And I am vertically challenged, yes. This is my home group. I love my home group, and it's good to be here. Let's see, sponsorship. I tried doing this without a sponsor, and my story is, you know, that I like to drink and I like to do a lot of drugs, and I just ran it into the ground. My life became impossible to live, a very unenjoyable life, and there were a lot of problems going on. The IRS was dogging me. I had been stealing money from my mother for years, my mother and father for years. I had no driver's license. I was unemployable, okay? My union book was in arrears. There were no dues going on. No work prospects, no job prospects. And life was impossible. And, you know, my mode of transportation at the end of my run was a bicycle. that can be a little tiring at times. You know, when you've got a $100, $150 a day heroin habit, sometimes the bicycle ain't the way to go. And so one day I got my thumb out and I started hitchhiking back in 2001. It was October of 2001. And somebody had the nerve to pick me up. And it turned out to be someone from my past. And it turned out to be someone that was in AA. And they started doing what AA people do. They started filling me in on their wonderful life, you know. And I was not very interested. But I did do what a lot of you people, I did begin to do what a lot of you people do in AA. And I began to pray, God, get me the hell out of this guy's car, you know. You know, he was an old high school friend, and he filled me in, and, you know, I kind of filled him. Well, I lied to him, you know, the whole time, the whole ride there. Yeah, I'm going to see my girlfriend. Yeah. Give me a ride to the bus stop in the next town, and AA people are very helpful. And he did that. He gave me a bus ride. He gave me a ride to the bus stop. And the last thing he said to me was, "Tom, I'm going to stick with AA because I got tired of getting arrested." And off he went. And again, I said a little prayer. Thank God. You know, thank you, God, for getting me out of this car. And off he went. And I went on my run, and I lasted another 2 weeks. The prophet, like what he said, he had gotten tired of getting arrested, and after 2 weeks of running around, I got arrested. And, you know, I thought maybe you guys, you know, you AA people had a pipeline to the cop shop or something. But that was the beginning of my journey in recovery, and I began to do what it takes to recover here, and I began to surrender. I threw my hands up to the cop in a fit of desperation and panic, and I said, you know, take me, I'm yours, basically, you know. And very quickly, the wheels started spinning, you know, and I'm thinking, I got to go to the methadone clinic, and I got to get a prescription for Xanax, and I got to, you know, maybe get some antidepressants, and, you know, all kinds of stuff started rolling through my head, you know. But the cops were nice, and they suggested, you know, that they told me they'll have me out in a couple hours because we're on a first name basis in this town. It happened right here in this town, and I've been on a first name basis with most of the police officers in this town throughout my whole life because I grew up here. And what happened was, is I went to the emergency room the next day because I had a pretty good kick to go through, and the emergency room said go to detox, and I didn't get out of bed and detox for 2.5 days. And you know, thank God you guys do institution commitments. AA goes to hospitals, jails, detoxes, rehab. And so Monday the nurse comes in. She says, hey, go to the little TV room down here. Okay. Well, no, she said, you're scaring us is what she said. You need to get up and take a lap around the place, you know, because you've been in bed for 2.5 days. We want you to get your heart and blood moving around a little bit, you know, because I was kicking and twitching and foaming and bucking around in my bed for 2.5 days. And she's like, you know, it's time to get up and walk around. So I did the little detox shuffle around the, you know, 30 years of drinking and drug taking, you know, I could barely make a lap around. And she said, on your way back, stop in the TV room because people from AA are here. And I walked into the to the room, and the people from AA came, and it was that guy that had picked me up hitchhiking, okay? So that's two times I see the guy in 3 weeks. I'm getting a little paranoid now, you know? I'm getting a little, I think the guy's following me or something, maybe, but they came in and gave me an AA meeting. And so what happened was, is I made the promise in detox. I said, I'm going to stay sober now. It's going to take me a year, 18 months tops, to get, you know, to pay the IRS off, I had a court case coming up, to get everything all fixed in my life. I'm going to stay stopped for a while. You know, maybe a year from now, I'll get a 12-pack and watch Monday Night Football, you know, because that's legal, okay? My troubles were the illegal drugs. You know, I figure in a year or so, whatever, 6 months, a year, I can get a 12-pack. I mean, all this stuff went through my head. And what happened was, is I started going to meetings and, I started counting days. Well, I made the promise. I'm going to take a year off, and what happened was the year only lasted 7 days. I could only stay sober 7. I could only stay sober 7 days. I started counting my days over again, and 3 weeks into this program, I gave in and I got a sponsor, and I asked that guy to be my sponsor, and immediately he began taking me through the steps, and as the story ends. I've been living happily ever after. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce George from Baltimore.
I'm George, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, George!
You recording this shit? I mean, stuff?
Yeah.
I want to read this. Simply because... I just want you guys to sit around and think for an hour and a half. Where he was reading about, I don't even know where the hell it's at. Anyway, where he was reading about watching the fellowship grow up among a host of friends and all that. My sobriety date's November 26th of 1982, and none of that shit's happened for me. Nobody's loved me until I could love myself. Nobody was willing to go to any lengths to help me stay sober. But they were all willing to point out the exact nature of my wrongs at any given moment of any time. And I was listening to this gentleman in the beginning. If you're fighting booze, for Christ's sake, go get a drink. Step two tells us we have to find a power greater than ourselves who can remove the problem. And if you still got the problem, apparently you haven't asked him or he hasn't removed it. So if I was you, I'd just keep drinking. It'll pass. I come to the realization back in October of 1982 that I just couldn't live like that anymore. That's what happened to me. I drank my first step. And I didn't do much drugs because, I don't know, every time I got associated with drugs, it was like Quaaludes and it was pot and stuff like that. And I don't like to eat and I don't like to be slow. I don't know about anybody else. You know, I drink, because when I drink, booze gives me almost like an upper type effect. Gives me an adrenaline, gives me a rush, and I just keep going after it. I don't like anything to slow me down. That's why when I come up here tonight, I ain't bringing anybody with me. Because I don't like to bring people who like to slow me down. You know? They got to stop and eat. They got to stop and go to the bathroom. They got to talk the whole way from Baltimore to here. And then time before I come up here, I brought Doreen. She said, I'll come with you to keep company. I didn't even get on Fairmont Avenue, and she slept the whole way back to York, which was the best company she ever provided. You know, I often wonder why, and I've talked to a lot of people over the years, I often wonder why social drinkers don't drink socially all the time. Doesn't make sense. If I was a social drinker, I'd be social drinking right now. And I'd be social drinking as much as I could, as often as I could, in any amount that I could. But see, I'm an alcoholic who cannot safely take a drink. It took me almost 14 years to come to that conclusion. Even though, up until those first 14 years, I mean, the first time I got drunk, I passed out in the backyard, urinated all over myself, threw up all over myself, and it was on Boone's Farm apple wine. And the decision I made that next morning when I came to, hungover, stinking, smelling, and all that good stuff was, I ain't never drinking wine again as long as I live. Never did. Never did. The consequences were the price I had to pay to drink that night wasn't as bad as the results I got from taking that drink that night. Because up until that point, I was kind of like a big hunk of Swiss cheese with all these holes running through it. But as soon as I started drinking, that booze just filled everything up. And I became solid. Up until that point, in my mind, I was never as good as anybody else. Once I took a drink, I really didn't give a shit about anybody else. I didn't care what you thought about me anymore. I didn't care what you said about me anymore. I just immediately got to the point where I just stopped caring about anything, anyone, any place, any time. And the only thing that I cared about from that point on until November 26th of 1982 was drinking. And I would go anywhere, any place, any time, anyhow. I didn't care how I got there or what I had to do. If there was drinking involved, I was there. Invited or uninvited, it didn't matter. If I heard about it, I was showing up. I was showing up. Now, in the beginning, it wasn't an everyday thing, and the problems weren't that bad. Hell, if I would have drank in the beginning like I drank at the end, I would have stopped years before that. But for me, booze wasn't something that was just an overnight disaster. It was a slow, methodical process. And that's the same way I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's been a slow, methodical process. But since I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I conceded to myself, nobody else, and nobody else had to tell me this anymore since that day, that I'm an alcoholic. Up until that point, everybody had a problem with my drinking. Anybody that was in my life, my parents, my brothers, my girlfriends, your girlfriends, hell, anybody's girlfriend, didn't bother me. I figure if you weren't with her, she was. I'm not even Italian and I talk with my hands. Anyway. And I didn't care. I didn't care because there was only two things at the age of 13 that I discovered. First thing I discovered was booze. Second thing I discovered was women. And that's all I need to know about life. I had no desire to go to class anymore. I wasn't about to be a rocket scientist. I had no intentions of being a teacher or a doctor or anything like that. My whole game plan was to get drunk and to get laid. And I pursued that until about 20 minutes ago. Not the drunk part, the other part. But that's all I ever needed to know. That's all the only thing that I ever pursued up until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, what that means for a guy like me is I learned about desire from women. You know, if you want what they have and are willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. So I learned about that, and I learned about drinking, and I pursued both of those until I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. Given an ultimatum, given a choice by employers, by family, by friends, by whatever. I remember my mom told me one night, if you're going to come home drunk tonight, don't come home. And I didn't. And the people that I worked for, the bosses, would be the same thing. Now, I didn't start out drunk and disorderly on the first day of work. This is a slow process. Because I'm the type of guy, I got to feel the way around to see what I can get away with. And I got to know how far I can go before I went too far. The problem is, when you drink like I drink, you're always overshooting the mark. By the time you realized you went too far, you already went too far. And the people I associate with, you know, when I came into the program and had to make amends, these people didn't want to have anything to do with me when I was drinking. They certainly didn't want to have anything to do with me when I was drunk. When I was sober. As a matter of fact, they said, we don't really give a shit what you're doing. Just go there and do that. Don't come back here. So given those ultimatums, I would take a drink, or I would take drinking over anything else. Whether it was school, whether it was work, whether it was relationships, whether it was family, whatever it was, it didn't really matter. And that's the way I was until I got the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 27. And up until that point, I had no idea that I was an alcoholic. Now, I had an idea of what an alcoholic was. And for me, it was the guy in the trench coat with the bottles in his bags and all that stuff. Now, as long, and he was living in the street. Now, the last 5 years of my drinking, I got drunk one night, and I was going up this back road in Pennsylvania from where I'm from, on the western side of Pennsylvania, and there's a sharp turn to the left, and I didn't make it, I just went straight. And I put the car in between two trees. And I couldn't get it to go backwards, I couldn't get it to go forward, so I just said, to hell with it, for the last 5 years, I just lived in it. You know, it wasn't until I got sober, it never dawned on me. See, I don't think about this stuff when I'm going through it. When I look back at that, I realized that I had a dilemma and didn't know it. I didn't know if I was supposed to pay car insurance or mortgage insurance. Because, you know, it was a car, so legally I guess it should be car insurance, but I was living in it, so it should have paid mortgage insurance. But this is the kind of stuff that goes through my mind. Stuff that really doesn't pertain to anything. I got to analyze it, contemplate it, and try to come up with some idea of how I should perceive the problem. And that's what we were talking about earlier. I have no idea what alcoholism is, but yet I'm trying to figure out how I can solve my drinking problem. The idea of not drinking doesn't ever come into it. But I got to figure out a way to get a hold of this thing. Because I'm starting to realize that maybe on some occasion I might be a little bit drunker than I want to be. So if I figure if I can get a hold of this thing, that I should have a better shot and I should be all right. So I tried the different things that are in the book. You know, I tried drinking, wait until after noon to drink. And I can do that because when I'm an alcoholic, when I'm stubborn enough and I make my mind up to do something, I'm going to do it. But as I'm doing this, I start to realize that I'm starting to become restless, irritable, and discontent when I'm not drinking. See, when I have other people put conditions on my drinking, like if you stay here, you can't drink. If you're coming over, you can't drink. If you're showing up for work, you can't drink on the job. So my solution is just get a job you can drink on. It makes perfect sense to me. Now, when other people put those conditions on me, it's no big deal. But when I start drawing a line or putting a condition on what I decide, like I'm not going to drink till noon, the only way I can live with myself is I have to change the idea that I'm not going to drink until 10 o'clock. Or I'm not going to drink till 8 o'clock. Or I'm not going to drink till 6 o'clock. And I do that often enough. I keep changing the rules so that I can justify drinking and I don't have to feel guilty or remorseful or shameful or anything like that. But there comes a point in that kind of process where I finally get to the realization that the hell with it, I'm just going to drink. And that's the story of my drinking and it's the story of my recovery. I get to the point where I just can't take it anymore, whatever it is. And I just say the hell with it and that's the answer. That's a basic surrender tactic. Now, I'm not a religious man. I was raised Catholic, which means I never stood a snowball's chance in hell from out of the gate, so why worry about it? I'm not going to be one of these who can earn his wings, you know, because I'm the type that if I end up earning my wings, I got enough people behind me going to shoot me down anyway. So I don't really concern myself about that. And besides, I'm the type of the attitude that there's no sense, you know, you're going to die and go to hell. Well, Christ, everybody I know is going to be there anyway, so it's not like it's going to be a room full of strangers. So you can't scare me into anything. You can't shame me into anything. Hell, you can't even make me feel guilty about anything. Because even though you're living by standards and principles and ideals, I don't. I have to be able to change those things so I can exist. So I can exist. I knew I was going to be dead at the age of 30. I had no desire to stop drinking. I remember I cried out one time at the ward end, sometime in August or September of 82. And I just sitting in the back seat of the car, curled up with a fifth of a Seagram 7, just minding my own business. And just drinking away, which is what I do, and I just sat there, and the thought came to me and says, you know, I just can't live like this anymore. Now, I didn't know about any other way to live. I never saw any other way to live. I never really had these ideals or anything like that, and I don't even know where that thought come from. But that was August or September. And on November 26th of 1982, I was at a bar, which is nothing unusual. It was a Friday night. And I was sitting there, and I ordered a drink, and it was Jack on the Rocks. And I just sat there, and I started drinking it. And this voice came to me that wasn't mine that said, your mother's dying, and you're killing yourself. And it's the first time that I can ever remember in my life, to that point, that I never finished a drink. Whether it was yours, whether it was mine, I don't care whose it was. But that was the first time I remember that I walked away from that drink and haven't had the desire to pick one up yet. See, I found a God somewhere. God found me, however you want to look at it. And once he removed that desire to drink, he took it away. It's kind of like the guy in my neighborhood. As a matter of fact, I got to do this when I go home. I'm glad I mentioned it so I remember to do it, because if I don't... Anyway, when I go home tonight, I'm going to put a trash can out by the curb. And this guy's going to come tomorrow morning, and he's going to take that what's in that trash can and take it away. He's not going to call me in an hour and ask me if I want it back. He's not going to turn around any time I'm not looking and put it back on the street. Once it's gone, it's gone. And that's what happened to my desire to drink. God took it away, and once he did, fortunately, he was a power greater than myself. I couldn't talk him into giving it back to me. Couldn't manipulate him into giving it back to me. I couldn't convince him to give it back to me. And I knew for the first time in my life that God not only existed, because I heard about him, I knew he was out there somewhere, and I knew that he was the type that he was going to get me. And as long as I stayed in the shadows, I mean, you don't want to live in the light when you drink, because they can see you in the light for one thing. I mean, you can't be that stupid. Or you could be. Anyway, but I stayed in the shadows, tried to stay one step ahead, and I think what really happened was I got distracted one day, or I got sidetracked one day, or something like that, and God showed up, and I never even asked him. He didn't ask me if he could come in either. He just showed up. And that's what happened for me. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous with this idea of what an alcoholic was. Now, an alcoholic is anybody that drank worse than I did. Basically, that's what an alcoholic was. And when I would get, say for example, I was associated with Jim, and I would start drinking as bad as Jim did, I would have to find somebody else who drank worse than Jim did. Because I could always find somebody else who drank worse than I did. I didn't know that when you drink with people like I drink with, they're also using you as a measuring stick. And they're looking at you and saying, when I get as bad as that asshole, then I'll do something about my drinking. And somehow I became other people's worst. I don't know what that was. So I came into Alcoholics Anonymous and knew with the idea of what an alcoholic was. And I came in here, and I really didn't want these guys to know that I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. Now, when I came in here, I had to act as if I knew what was going on, because I didn't want them to know that I didn't know. But what I didn't know was the fact they already knew that I didn't know. And they weren't going to let me know that I didn't know. They were going to let me try to bluff my way through just like I did everything else. And what happened for me was I was struck stupid. I was double dumb. I didn't know that I didn't know. And when they started talking about things, as a matter of fact, the first sponsor I ever got in Alcoholics Anonymous got me. This guy I used to drink with come up to me one night. And he come up to me because I was living in the car and he knew where I was. Now, he was one of these AA members like you see at the sponsorship group. I don't know if you've ever been to that group. But the sponsorship group has these people who, for some strange reason, they don't know that they're not supposed to take hostages. I don't know. They must have missed that in the book or somewhere. But They come to this conclusion because they're an alcoholic. Everybody they ever knew in their life is an alcoholic. So what they do is they start looking for you. And that's what happened. This guy started looking for me. And he didn't have to look long and he didn't have to look hard because he knew where I was. And he showed up at my house, which was the car, for the last 5 minutes. And he knocked on my door, and for some strange reason, I was home that night. And asked me if I wanted to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had no idea what the hell that was. And for some strange reason, I said, okay. So I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, put me in the front row. Two old guys sat on one side of me, got me a half a cup of coffee, and I shook it full. When I came in, I was like this. I thought I had a nervous disorder is what I had, but apparently that wasn't it. I thought I was in an anxiety mode. See, a guy like me, when I start coming off the stuff, that's when I'm in trouble. And I got sober with a bunch of guys who, and I still do it today, have a half a pint in their car, because kind of guys that show up on my doorstep usually carry guns, usually show up at 3 o'clock in the morning. Usually aren't happy to be at my house. You know, they didn't have anything better to do. And usually start coming off the stuff, so I just kind of nurse them through it that way, because that's what I was told to do. And they had it in the car, and they were going to give it to me if I needed it, and they decided if I needed a drink. So when I came here, these guys were a power greater than myself. They decided if I needed a drink. I remember telling Bill one night, it was about 3 or 4 days sober, and I was shaking, I was coming apart, and I thought I was going to flip. And I called him one day and I said, Bill, I said, I think I'm dying. He said, no, if you were going to die, you would die yesterday. I said, really? So that's, you know, that's the kind of way it was. I didn't know. And these guys put me in the stomp. I mean, granted, I went to school. I got a diploma. I don't know how the hell I ever got it, but I got it. And I knew a lot of stuff. But I didn't know a damn thing about staying sober. I didn't know what it was going to take. Now, when I was new, I didn't have a job. I wasn't with the family at all, whether it was my mother or my brothers or my soon-to-be ex-wife at the time. Wasn't allowed to see my kids. I mean, I was blessing these people with my absence, and they were really thrilled about that. And so I really didn't have a lot to do. I really didn't have a social calendar at the time when I came in here. And I certainly, after not living in the car for the last 5 years, not bathing, not shaving, not doing any of that kind of stuff, and have all these sores and that all over my body, I wasn't really dating material when I got here either. So I didn't really have any kind of agenda. And Bill told me that night, when he brought me back to my house, he told me that he was going to be my sponsor because I didn't look like I was bright enough to get one. And normally I would have taken offense to that. For some strange reason, I didn't. You know, there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous who can tell you, look you dead in the eye, and tell you to go to hell, and you want to smack them up beside your head. And there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous who will tell you to go to hell, and you look forward to the trip. And that's what happened to me. You know, the things that I was supposed to be offended by and the things that I was supposed to be upset about didn't faze me. The things that were none of my business irritated the hell out of me. And I don't know why that was, but that's the way it was. So I went to meetings with these guys. They picked me up every night. They took me to meetings. They took me back to that car for the first 2 weeks. They didn't take me to a rehab. They didn't take me to a halfway house. Never been in a rehab. Never been in a halfway house. Never been in a detox. I detoxed in the backseat of that car. I found out later they told me that they never took me to those places because they weren't convinced I was going to stay. They thought I was just here to get the heat off or something like that. I mean, I'm living in a car. It's the middle of November, the end of November. It's kind of like the temperature is now. I don't know what the hell heat they were talking about because there wasn't any around where I was at. And I ran out of friends and enemies at the same time. See, I came here with nothing. I came here with nothing. And that's the best place a guy like me can end up. In a place where there's nothing. You know, my biggest, you know, we talk about it and you hear about it all the time. Make a list of things you want to have happen in your first year of sobriety. Now, I had an 8-step list. I had a hit list, is what I had. And I wanted to see all these people suffer. And I wanted to see them miserable. And I wanted to see them broke and battered and torn the same way I was when I came in here. I just wanted everybody to be just like me. Just like me. And So I really didn't have high expectations. I just wanted to know, when I came in here, they would say things like, it's the first drink that gets you drunk. And I would sit there and say, yeah, okay, what's the catch? I wouldn't say that out loud, but I would wonder what the catch was. Because I don't ever remember the first drink ever getting me drunk. And they would say things like, you think it's tough staying away from the first drink. If you're an alcoholic, try staying away from the second drink. And for some strange reason, I understood that. I understood that. See, you're going to hear so many things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for me in the beginning, what a sponsor basically was a filter. The things that I would hear at meetings and the things that he would hear at meetings were different. And the things that he would tell me he heard was the things that I needed to hear. And the things that I would tell him that I heard was the things I wanted to hear. You know? I mean, he would hear, there's only two times you go to a meeting, when you want to and don't want to. I didn't hear that. What I heard was, do 90 and 90. Which means a guy like me, I only have to suffer here for 90 days. Because if it don't work, I'm allowed to leave. I don't have to stay here. I didn't have to stay here. I didn't know that. Yeah, I didn't know it was okay to not drink. And if you didn't want to drink, you didn't have to. I didn't know that. I didn't know that. And that was the dumb part. The double dumb part for me was I didn't know how not to drink. Now, they gave me one scenario of how, for a guy like me, not to drink. And it was simply this. If you want to take a drink, you call me first. If I can't talk you out of it, I'll buy it for you. So, I'm an alcoholic. I don't want to jump into anything. You know, I don't want to be irrational here and make a fatal mistake like getting sober or anything like that. So I figure I'm going to test these guys out. So I called Bill up one day. I said, Bill, I want a drink. He said, I'll be right over. Now, you can either do this or not. It's up to you. But let me tell you the consequences of what happened when I did it. So, I mean, he lived, I guess it was a good half hour's drive on a good day. And I don't know, it seemed like 3 minutes later he was in my driveway. And he had the lights on, still, shining on the front door. And he opens the car door on the driver's side, goes into the trunk, and comes around the car. Now he has his headlights on, and I can't see what he's doing. Till he gets in front of the headlights. And I can see him with a fifth of gin and a baseball bat. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm getting a little suspicious. This ain't going to work out the way I thought it was going to work out. So he comes into the house. I sit at the dining room table. His lights and car are on and still running. I sit at the dining room table. He said, all right, you want a drink? Here's what you're going to do. And he slammed that fifth down and said, you're going to drink it straight down nonstop. And when you do, I'm going to beat the living hell out of you with this baseball bat. This is going to remind you of what happens when you want to take a drink. So, now, if it would have stopped there, that would have been all well and good. Because he already had my attention. But what he did was, he broke the seal on the cap. And I said, I don't want to drink. He said, that's about as close to the truth as you're ever going to get in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, now, if you don't want to drink, there are certain things you must do. And I said, what's that? He said, there's 161 of them in the big book. And you must do every one of them. You can't skip any of them. You must do every one of them. And the first thing I must do was I must write a four-step. And I started writing a four-step. Now, I did a four-step just like everybody else did. I put a list of everybody that had harmed me, the exact nature of how they harmed me, and my perception of how they were going to make that right. And I don't know, it was like 14, 15 pages of that stuff. And he gave me 3 days to get it done. And he come back over 3 days later without the gin but he had the baseball bat. And came into the house where I was living, sat down at the table. He said, I want to see your four steps. So I gave it to him. And he looked at it and he turned pages. I don't think he was that much of a speed reader. But anyway, he looked at them real fast. And he said, you know, he said, I've been sober 6 months now. He says, and that has got to be the best first step I've ever heard in my life. Because that basically was about the unmanageability of my life. So 3 days prior to that, I come to the realization that I'm powerless over alcohol. I don't want to drink. That's all it means. I don't want to drink. I don't want to give booze the opportunity to do to me what it's going to do to me. You know, it's no longer worth what it's going to do for me, because the price I'm going to have to pay for the four isn't worth what it's going to do to. So I'm not willing to pay that price there. 3 days later, I come to find out that my life is unmanageable. These people that I had resentments to, and these people that I was afraid of, and these people that I had problems with, were nowhere in sight. And they were all living up here. See, I suddenly realized by talking to him what they meant was the problem centers in the mind. Because every problem I have is imagined. None of it's real. But it's all imagined. But I'm going to tell you something. When I come up with an idea, and I come up with a plan, I know it's going to work because it's my plan. I'm the designer of it. I'm the engineer of it. And now I'm getting ready to execute my plan. Now, when you're a guy like me and you're about to execute anything, you better be prepared that you're going to get executed. Because I never understood this, and I heard this as a young boy. I remember it as much as I remember anything else. I remember that what goes around comes around. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Treat people the way you want to be treated. But I didn't realize that the thoughts of doing those things, whether they're followed at once with a course of action or not. In other words, if I think about slicing Jim's throat, whether I do it or not, puts me in a position that somebody's going to want to slice my throat. So all the people that I was afraid of, and all the people that I thought were after me, weren't the ones that were going to hurt me. It was going to be people that I least expected it. It was going to happen at times when I never anticipated it. All my plans and my ideas are just simply that. None of them are any good. None of them are ever going to work. And none of them are going to bring anything good about it. So from that day until now, I've gotten to the place where when I get an idea, and I'll tell you what, I get some doozies. What I do is, I still have a sponsor today. He's sober 43 years. When I go to him, I sound like a friggin' idiot. When I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about these plans and ideas, God, they're good. I mean, oh man. Somebody told me one day they could build monuments to my self-centeredness. But anyway. Yeah. I get these ideas and I get these thoughts. And if I go to my sponsor, I sound like a friggin' idiot. But if I go to my new guys, I sound like a friggin' genius. So what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous, why we work with other alcoholics, it's not to see the lights in their eyes. It's not to see a fellowship grow about us. It's for guys like me to convince the guys behind me to try my ideas. I said it to this young man tonight. Why don't you start your own business and let me know how that works for you? See, I want to make six figures, but I don't want to have to leave the house. You know, I want to have a nice car, but I don't want to pay the car payment. And I want to have all the things that we're all entitled to. You know, I want to have, well, I don't anymore, but I was thinking about this young woman back here, the desire to go back to school to improve the quality of her life in the future. People have that all the time. I get those thoughts, I just don't have what it takes to make them work. So for a guy like me, I need a sponsor who's going to push me. I need a sponsor who's going to drive me. I need, you know, when Steve asked me to come up here tonight, I mean, I spent the hell 6 hours this morning trying to figure out a way to get out of this. Because I figure, so the final conclusion was about 2:30. I said, well, I'm just going to call him and say, the weather's bad, what? Christ, we're 4.5 hours apart. What the hell does he know what's going on in Boulder? Plus, he's younger than me in recovery. I mean, I'm an old guy. I know how to blow smoke up people's ass and get away with it. And by the time they figure it out, it's too late because I couldn't make it here on time anyway. So I'm thinking, well, all right, 2:30, I'm going to give him a call. Yesterday, for some strange reason, I just cleaned out my cell phone and deleted all the numbers and didn't have his number. So then I figured, well, I'm coming up. I'm going to call Jim. So I called my wife because I was coming up and I figured, you know, give me the idea that I'm on my way up and traffic's bad. I'll come up with something. Because I spent so much time trying to get out of this. If I would have just shut up, got in the car, got my ass up here and go home. But no, I'm not that kind of guy. I gotta make it worse. I gotta make it difficult. I gotta make it an adventure. And so I'm coming up here and I'm gonna call Jim, but I don't have Jim's phone number. So I'm going to call the house and get it from my wife. My wife's not home. So I'm going to call my wife's cell phone and get it from her. Cell phone's not on. So I'm going to call Doreen because I know Doreen has. I call Doreen. She don't answer her phone either. Now, I'm already into New Jersey. But see, that don't stop me from trying to get out of doing what I need to do. Because I'm an alcoholic. And I have alcoholism, by the way. You know, I'm not one of these guys that's cured and none of these thoughts ever cross my mind, or, you know, the thought of suicide or homicide or both at the same time. None of those thoughts still come because, see, I still have alcoholism and it wants to take me out of places like this. It wants to remove me from the life that I have. Now, I'd like to tell you that I spent the last 25 years building up my empire. I just told you what happened the first 27 years of building up my empire. I wound up here with nothing. But because God has so blessed me and has given me so many opportunities and so many gifts that He has given me a life worth living. But He also gives me the opportunity to live that life. And then He gives me the opportunity to come to a place like this tonight to tell you that the same opportunities God has offered me or given to me is available for every one of you. But the hook is, there's certain things you have to do. You must be prepared for what God has in store for you. See, I have seen a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous stay in Alcoholics Anonymous through death, through loss of whatever, the careers that have gone south, relationships that have gone south. And I've seen them struggle through Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've seen them go through the pain of those processes and get on the other side. Is processes a word? Who the fuck cares? Sounded good. Anyway. But yet I see people come into Alcoholics Anonymous in the first year and they get a girlfriend or a boyfriend. And they get a great job. And the wife or the family starts bringing them back home for holidays. And before that year is up, they're sitting off somewhere in the car or corner or someplace with a gun in their mouth ready to blow their friggin' brains out. I've seen too many people taken out of Alcoholics Anonymous because of success. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous in the beginning to be miserable. It just turned out that way when I got here. But what they were doing was slowly taking those things from me. My resentments, my fears, my all these other thoughts and ideas that I had. See, I wasn't prejudiced when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. I hated everybody equally. So I didn't have faith. Christ, only got 5 minutes. Anyway. So what they were doing was preparing me for the good that God was going to bring into my life. So that I didn't screw it up again. See, if I look at it, if I'm honest about it, if I go back to those first 27 years in prior to Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of good opportunities. But given a choice to drink or to take those advantage of those opportunities, I'm going to drink. Since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I've had a lot of good opportunities come my way, and I've taken advantage of those opportunities. See, what God has given me is His gift to me. What I do with Him is my gift to Him. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't owe me jack. You know, I don't have to be sitting at home waiting for them to come for me. I'm the one who owes the debt to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't do anything different than my sponsor did 26 years ago. I don't do anything different than my sponsor does today. My sponsor was up in, where was he? He was in Dover, Delaware on Monday. He was in Richmond on Wednesday. I was in Alexandria on Tuesday, and I'm in New Jersey on Sunday. Only because that's what my sponsor does. I've got a sponsor that's active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hang around people that are active in Alcoholics Anonymous. The people who generally usually travel with me coming up this far or something like that are busy doing something for Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. Whether they're taking their girls or guys or whatever the case may be, or whether they're spending time with their families, or whatever they're doing. They're showing a sense of gratitude, and they're really giving the respect and the love back to God that He's given them in the last however long they've been sober. If Alcoholics Anonymous isn't working in your life, the answer is real simple. It's because you ain't working it. These steps work. If they didn't work, we wouldn't be going around the means trying to convince people they work. You know? I mean, why would I drive 4.5 hours to convince you of something that I know doesn't work? I'm just here to tell you it works. And it works because I work it, not when I work it. I don't have a choice. I have to work. I have to do this every day. I don't like it. I don't want to do it. But I do it anyway. I do it anyway. Because it's better than the alternative. And the alternative is simply this. I've been around Alcoholics Anonymous to see what happens to people who don't do this stuff. So, getting sober for a guy like me was a son of a bitch. Staying sober is a piece of cake. And it's real simple what I do today. And I'm going to break it down in three parts. For me, I ask God in the morning to help me stay sober. And then I act like He does. So I get busy with what's going on in front of me. And I do whatever it takes to get the job done. Today, up until around 3 o'clock before I started getting ready to come up here, I had to do nothing. Which is my best gift. I love doing nothing. I didn't have a honey-do list today. I didn't have anything work-related today. All I had to do today was this. That's all I had to do. And I live each day as if... I pray each day as if everything depends upon God because for me it does. And I live each day as if everything depends on me. I've been given something that everybody in this room, it's laid before your feet tonight. The only difference was because when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous on November 26th of 1982, I was already put on my knees. So for me to lift up that kit of spiritual tools wasn't that heavy. Wasn't that difficult because they were laid right at me. I think we all have to get to that point. Anybody I know who has any sense of gratitude for Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten to the point where they suddenly realized, no matter how long it takes, they suddenly realized God could and did. Thanks very much.